It's like H.P. Lovecraft. All his stuff is great, but oh boy.
Yeah, you don't celebrate it. Read the book. It's good horror, well, and there, just never, never touch it again.
There's also the one letter at the end of his life where he's coming around. Like, if he hadn't died, he probably would have, like, recanted most of the things he said.
Hey, do you guys know the name of his cat?
Frank Herbert? Yeah, I think it's Mark. I think it's Meow Deep.
Don't Google that.
I'm pretty sure it's Meow Deep.
It's an even worse name, Steve. It's Brian Herbert.
Oh my god.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Capitalism.
And Ryan.
Pour one out for O.J. Simpson, taking his last Bronco ride to hell.
Pour one juice out for the juice.
The juice is no longer loose, man. It's done.
That's how Steve announced it to me, by the way. He sent me a message on Facebook Messenger and said, the juice is no longer loose. And I was like, I was busy at work, so I didn't know what he meant. I thought O.J. got arrested again, and so did my wife. When she saw his pictures online, she was like, ah, shit. O.J. got arrested again. Yeah. Like, nope, yeah. O.J.'s fucking dead.
Nope. Yeah.
You just have to play that compilation of David Schwimmer just saying juice repeatedly from the People vs. O.J. Simpson.
Oh, man, I never watched it, so.
It's really good.
Yeah.
He can rest easy now he knows, or now that, you know, his wife's killer is dead. He can rest easy.
That's true. You gotta make all those like stifled laugh sounds.
That one Norm MacDonald quote after the verdict came out, it just says, ladies and gentlemen, murder is now legal in the state of California.
Yeah, Norm MacDonald, man.
Oh man,
Steve and I were talking about Norm, and because I always heard the story was that Don Ohlmeyer fired him because he was friends with OJ, and he made so many OJ jokes, and he just wouldn't stop doing it, no matter how many times they told him, like, you got to stop making OJ jokes, because Ohlmeyer was getting up for his boy, and Ohlmeyer was an asshole. Everybody at NBC fucking hates Don Ohlmeyer. Letterman made fun of him openly, like, all the time. He couldn't stand him. But I guess they like justified it because Norm MacDonald dropped an F-bomb on the air, which today seems so tame, you know?
Yeah.
But in like 93, it was still like, Mortal Kombat's going to make everyone cut each other's heads off, you know? Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mom.
He dropped the F-bomb during a Weekend Update.
Yeah.
And then right after he said it, he just stopped. He said, I'm fired, aren't I?
That's awesome. Oh, my God.
So today, boys, speaking of F-bombs...
Uh-oh, we're talking about France, huh?
Hmm? Futurama.
Finland.
No. We're going to be talking about some boys who were friends with some F-bombs, the Franks. This is the Knights Templar we're going to be talking about today.
Oh shit. I love the Knights Templar. It's so interesting. They got rung up because they were lending money to the wrong people.
I am all about some greedy Christians.
You just got to be careful. You can't lend your money to the wrong people. You know, if you lend your money to people that are too powerful, they'll just kill you.
I love the idea that they were.
I just gave away the whole fucking episode.
Well, there's a bunch of dudes who are like, hey, we're going to protect you on this road. No worries. We're just doing this out of the goodness of our hearts. Fast forward 5 years. It's like, hey, listen, man. You got to give me everything you fucking own.
Gotcha.
And we might get you there. It's like a New York cab. Like, hey, listen, we're going to charge you 16 times what you think it should cost to go two blocks in New York. And you might not even get there.
Now, you didn't look at the fine print on the contract, but you'll find that our Templar fortress there in the Levant, it is technically on a Christian reservation. And as a Christian reservation, we can charge usurious amounts, and that's a 25% loan you took out.
Yeah.
Incredible.
But yes, first we'll talk about, in this episode, we'll talk about the mundane history of the Knights Templar, how they got.
Mundane. Banal history of the mundane Templars.
The banality of evil.
And then in the next episode, we'll talk about the crazier stuff.
A horrendous example of capitalism.
Oh my god. Oh, this is so.
I'm the only Jamaican Templar.
When he does this for the next hour and a half, we were talking about something earlier before we started recording, and I said, I just like started screaming about capitalism. He's like, why do you sound Jamaican when you said capitalism?
I swear to God.
He just took off.
I swear to God, he said, capitalism. Who wanna test me, Bomberclad? I'm the number one Forbes 500 Dandara.
Oh god.
Anyway.
Did the Knights Templar go to Jamaica?
Well, that'll be more for the second episode.
Oh my god. He's like, actually,
hell yeah.
Matter of fact.
The roast curry Templar.
So after the Franks capture Jerusalem during the First Crusade, taking it from the Fatimid Caliphate in 1099, many Christians start making pilgrimages to the Holy Land. Although Jerusalem itself is relatively secure under the control of the former Crusader forces, the rest of Outremer, the Levant, is not. Due to the sort of power vacuum that comes with the Christian forces just sort of like pushing out the local leaders and powers there, bandits and highwaymen have sort of taken over the countryside and they've begun preying on Christian pilgrims,
right.
Who they routinely slaughter, sometimes by the hundreds, as they attempted to as these pilgrims attempt to make the journey from the coastline at Jaffa through the interior of the Holy Land.
Now, like, the Levant, that's, like, Israel, Jordan, Iran, like, that area.
Yeah, it's essentially, like, when people talk about the Middle East, even though the Middle East is, like, huge,
yeah,
that's what people think of.
Right in the armpit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you tell me the Middle East, the first thing I think of is Saudi Arabia. Very weird.
Well, you tell Don't me the why. Middle East, I think of Iowa, you know? I don't know why, because it's not in the Middle East.
It's the same thing. It's just corn substituted for sand. It's all it is. It's literally just fields of corn.
I'm looking at a map because I am geographically challenged. So technically, the Middle East would technically be Virginia or Kentucky. That's like right in the middle. Tennessee, I don't count as a state. So
Tennessee is Kentucky Junior.
Tennessee and Mississippi are basically like open for business racism, so I have nothing to say about them.
Well, I mean, if we're doing that, then so is Mississippi, so is like 80%.
I just said
Georgia.
That. I said Tennessee and Mississippi. Yeah.
Oh, at least in Alabama, my bad. Well then fuck it, add Alabama.
Any state that has doubled consonants or doubled vowels is fucking racist. It's my theory.
In 1119, the French knight, Hugh de Payant, he approached King Baldwin II of Jerusalem and Warmund, Patriarch of Jerusalem, and proposed creating a monastic Catholic religious order in order to protect pilgrims. Both Baldwin and Warmund agreed to his request, and this was probably done at the Council of Noblesse in January of 1120. The king would grant that the Templars a headquarters in a wing of the royal palace on the Temple Mount in the captured Al-Aqsa Mosque. The poor fellow soldiers of Christ and the Temple of Solomon are also known as the Order of Solomon's Temple.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque still exists, right?
Yes, that's uh-huh. That's the like the... The Temple of the Rock.
Inshallah.
they would also be known as the Knights Templar, or simply the Templars. The Temple Mount, where they had their headquarters, had also sort of a mystique around it as well, because it was believed that their headquarters was on top of the ruins of the Temple of Solomon.
Oh, shit. Okay.
The Crusaders had referred to the Al-Aqsa Mosque as Solomon's Temple, and from this location, they took the name that I just said because of that.
Okay.
The order with about nine knights, including Godfrey de Saint-Omer and André de Montbard, had few financial resources starting out and relied on donations to survive.
God forbid.
You know what the best nation in the world is? Donation. One of the best movies ever. Cheesy as shit. With honors. Love it.
Excellent.
Their emblem was two knights riding a single horse, emphasizing the order's poverty.
Oh, is that what it is? Poverty? They're not just like best friends on the horse together?
Yeah. Best friends. They were chilling on a horse.
They were roommates.
One saddle apart because they're not gay.
It's the roommate you're always bringing to like family dinners and stuff like that.
This is my roommate, Eric.
I'm just bringing my friend.
You know, we can't say that because at that time everyone had a lisp. Like every single person alive, so.
I couldn't take... Like,
that's like one of those like fake historical facts you could just throw out there, like your fucking Georgios Tsoukalos or whatever.
Bro, they could put me under the guillotine and be like, do you have any last words? And I would start laughing, and you'd be like, all right, motherfucker.
That'd be amazing.
I was going to say...
My last words would be me like, scream laughing as this huge blade comes down on my neck.
When Ryan gets executed in Castile.
Someone talking with a lisp is a good tolerance check. Like, to see, like, because, like, if you react to it immediately, you're either a child or you're, like, a prick. You know what I mean? Because, like, at the end of the day, like, I know, I went to high school with a guy who had, like, a serious lisp. I mean, like...
He had a lisp like he was speaking in cursive.
Huh? It was just awful how we talked to each other. Exactly. It was real bad, dude. And he was not gay. Like, that's just his voice. I'm going to check this guy. Hey.
Hey.
I knew it. You're a fucking asshole.
Come here, you silly goose.
Oh, my God. Look, we're not being mean here. This is just how the Templars talked, all right? We know for a fact.
I'm going to protect you on this.
It's in the records.
The venerable,
it came up during their trial.
The venerable Bede wrote it down. Now, he was probably long dead. When was Bede alive, Steve? We should do one on Bede, by the way.
Bede?
Yeah, the venerable Bede. That was 735 he died. He's an English monk.
All right.
The impoverished status of the Templars did not last for very long because they found early on that they had a powerful advocate in Saint Bernard of Clairvaux, who was a leading church figure and French abbot who was responsible for the founding of the Cistercian Order of Monks and a nephew of André de Montbard, one of the founding knights of the Knights Templar.
Gotcha.
How many of the Templar were French? Were they all French?
They were not.
Okay.
And they sort of were all over Europe.
Okay.
They're like the French Foreign Legion.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of French people around because France is like one of the most populous areas of Europe at this time.
Yep. It's a big Cluj.
You say Cluj? What the fuck? What is that?
What is a Cluj?
Yeah.
Just a collection of, like, parts. Unsorted collection. No, look up the word Cluj. Kluge.
No. I need to turn safe search on before I search that.
I think there's a D in there. Let me look it up. Yeah, Kludge. Sorry.
About $100 for a Cluj.
What is a Cluj? Sometimes I order the Cluj, which is when you go to Dairy Queen, you order the Blizzard with all the toppings.
I also like how your delivery of Cluj is almost like the Jeopardy delivery. What is a Cluj?
What is a Cluj?
It sounds like a sex act. She Clujed on me.
I Clujed all over. I reached the apex of my limits and Clujed.
It was great. It was one of the best Cluges I've ever Cluged.
Bernard, being a somewhat powerful church figure, would put his weight behind them and wrote persuasively on their behalf in the letter. In the letter he wrote in the praise of the new knighthood, in 1129 at the Council of Troyes, he led a group of leading churchmen to officially approve and endorse the order on behalf of the church.
Ah, yes, the Council of Troyes, right?
Yes.
Okay, I've heard of that before. That's how I knew how to spell it.
Is it not Troyes?
It's probably like Trois or something, you know? It's fucking shit, some French shit. The Council of Trois, you know, Trois. Something like that.
Goddamn froggy with his Frenchies.
With his blessing. I put the egg on the toast and I cook on the oven. He's French now.
Jesus Christ. With a cigarette half hanging out of your mouth.
Calm down there, Jacques. Oh, my God.
With his blessing, the Templars became a favorite charity throughout Christianity, and they received money, land, businesses, and noble-born sons from families who were eager to help them fight in the Holy Land. At the Council of Pisa in 1135, Pope Innocent II initiated the first papal monetary donation to the order.
Yeah.
Pope Innocent II, that sounds sussy as fuck.
Well, he wasn't very innocent, but...
Clearly.
They would receive another benefit in 1139 when Innocent II's papal bull Omne Datum Optimum exempted the order from obedience to local laws. This ruling meant that the Templars could pass freely through all borders.
A papal bull is when the Pope cucks the entire church population.
A papal bull, if Catholic school taught me correctly, is like a decree, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
It's like, y'all do this now. Stand Ryan, on one leg. Do it. Stand on one leg. That's my goal.
Because the Pope said so.
Right? Ryan makes a serious point, and I was going to just make a remark about how opulent the papal cucking, like, cuck chair is.
Just jewel-encrusted cuck chair. You know, if I was making papal bulls, I would make the weirdest, like, things ever. Like, I would do one where, like, I would say, from now on, all Christians must, if you're angry, you have to throw with your non-dominant hand, whatever you're going to throw.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
You know?
That's excellent.
Just make yourself... I love that, by the way. Just, like, I've seen it online before. They're like, you're angry, you're going to throw something, throw with your left hand, and you throw it, and you just feel like an idiot because you can't throw with your left hand, so you forget why you're angry.
That's awesome.
So good.
But that...
What a de-escalation tactic. I'm sorry. That's a hell of a de-escalation tactic.
Yeah. All right, or sit there and tell them, oh, you're real pissed off? Yeah, try to be angry saying the word bubbles. You can't do it, can you? Say it angrily. Say bubbles angrily.
I wouldn't even try right now. Because I know
what bubbles.
It sounds like. No. Bubbles!
Can't do it.
As I was saying, that this... papal bull made it so that they were beholden to nobody but the Pope and were able to freely move about and be exempt from taxation and local laws.
So, real quick, so because Pope Guilty put this papal bull out saying that, no, my
Pope Guilty!
My people can go anywhere the fuck they want and you can't make them do anything that they don't want to do, right?
Yeah.
How does that translate to... And I know that the idea of, like, countries and stuff is probably still like a novel idea back then, but like how does that translate to the places where people are like, fuck you, we don't know that guy.
Hey, where are we right now? I don't know, it's fucking 1100, who knows.
Like, imagine me like writing
Alabama,
it's like, hey, listen, if you have this piece of paper, you're good to like walk down this one road, right? And then you go walking down this road and like people stop you and they're like, who the fuck is this that wrote this, we don't know that guy.
Well, at the time the church kind of ran things, right?
Yeah. Because all the rulers in Europe, they sort of get their
power.
They get their legitimacy from the Pope. Mm-hmm. So that's why, like, that's why, you know, for instance, like with Henry VIII, like when he wants a divorce, he has to go to the Pope. He just doesn't say like I'm getting divorced. Like screw the Pope. He eventually does, but
yeah,
within the Commonwealth as well, that they're all Catholic as well. So they don't want to go against the Pope because he's a successor to Jesus, essentially.
Yeah. Now, okay, well, then my question is then, if the Pope is, like, the final order, why did you need Knights Templar to protect people? Everybody should listen to the decree because they're the Pope.
Because crime?
Well,
they'd be criming.
Well, they're not fighting Gentiles. They're fighting Muslims. That's the whole purpose of them. So, like, the Muslims aren't going to listen to the Pope.
I knew it. No, I'm just kidding.
There it is. All right.
Okay. Now the racism comes
These
out.
Damn Muslims, they won't listen to the Pope. If they would just listen to the Pope,
bring the mountain to Muhammad. Okay.
Oh my God.
So as the Templars are gaining in support and resources, they begin to grow rapidly. Templars are often used as shock troops in key battles of the Crusades, as their heavily armored knights on war horses would set out to charge at the enemy ahead of the main army bodies in an attempt to break the opposition's lines. One of the most famous victories was in 1177 during the Battle of Montgisard, where some 500 Templar knights helped several thousand infantry to defeat Saladin's army of more than 26,000 soldiers.
Holy shit.
So while their primary mission was militaristic, only a small number of them were combatants. So at their peak, when they had around 15,000 to 20,000 members, only about 10% of them were knights.
So were the Knights Templar, like, regarded as, like, the Navy SEALs of today? Where they're, like, insane, they have this air of, like, it being, like, insane warriors, they're fighters, like, you know, their mere presence will make people kind of be like, ah, maybe I don't want to do this stupid shit with these guys around.
Well, I would say from, like, the standpoint of people in, like within Christianity, it's like, oh yeah, these guys are like the best of the best. It's like in Game of Thrones, like the Kingsguard, whenever they talk about the Kingsguard.
Okay.
And they're like, oh, these are the great heroes. These are the great like warriors. I don't think people in like the Arab world or the Muslim world at this time, because it's not fair to call them all to lump them all as being Arab, because Saladin, for instance, was a Kurd. So I don't think they really knew who they were or really what they were. They sort of probably recognized them, but they weren't like, oh yeah, these guys are badasses. They're like, oh yeah, these guys are pretty tough.
They recognized them because they had on sweet, like, you know, big red crosses.
Yeah. Because they're wearing sweet tabards. 300-pound stainless steel armor in the fucking desert.
Yeah.
Just blinding everybody with the sun beaming off their
shit.
Why
aren't you sweating?
That's why, huh? Fucking successful. That's why they're successful right there. Nobody could see them. They were blinded by the fucking sunlight.
Several of them have passed out due to heat stroke.
But they don't fall down because they're in that armor. That armor keeps their body upright. So they've passed out hours ago, but nobody dares come near them because these men are.
What's
just,
wrong with Gregory over how there? How are they? He's okay? Sitting there for 3 days.
He's been on the horse straight up and down this whole time. It's amazing. He's so powerful. Meanwhile, his squire's like, Greg, get up.
I feel like we're relitigating the beginning of A Knight's Tale.
It's such a good movie.
Such an awesome movie. I love it.
Fuck everyone who gives it a bad rating.
So the majority of the people within the Knights Templar, they work to assist the knights and also manage the financial infrastructure of the order.
Yeah, they're like go-getters or whatever.
Gophers.
Gophers. Thank you.
The Templar order, though its members are sworn to individual poverty, was given control over wealth beyond direct donations. For instance, a nobleman who was interested in participating in the Crusades might place all his assets under Templar management while he was away. So accumulating wealth in this manner throughout the Christian world and in Ultramar, the order in 1150 began generating letters of credit for pilgrims journeying to the Holy Land. Pilgrims would deposit their valuables with a local Templar preceptory before embarking and received a document indicating the value of their deposit, then used that document upon arrival in the Holy Land to retrieve their funds in an amount of treasure of equal value.
Bro, this is a bank. They have invented banking.
Well, they didn't invent shit, but they became a bank.
I don't think Wells Fargo existed back in...
No, but there were banks. I mean, there were definitely financial institutions.
Yeah, it's just sort of...
how? Christians didn't believe in usury back then.
You can have a bank without interest rates.
No, you fucking can't. That's the whole point of a bank.
You can, because like Muslim banking has no interest rates.
What?
Yeah, there's because Muslims still have the provision on usury, and so like banking in most Muslim countries, like the banks don't operate the same way. They don't have interest rates and stuff like that.
I like how you say they still have the provision against usury, like Christians went through the Bible and just whited out everywhere. Jesus said you can't charge interest.
The Catholic Church essentially did that, and then everybody else followed suit within Christianity. Really? Yeah, because they said banking, and then eventually they said like, oh well, as long as the interest rate is not excessive, like you can charge an interest rate or with banking.
Everyone proceeded to make the interest rates excessive.
Yeah. Like, all right, yeah, 50% is not excessive, right?
But that's essentially why we associate like usury with like a high interest rate. I'm not 100% sure on this, but I believe the original definition is any type of interest rate.
Correct. That is the original. Yeah. But, no interest whatsoever.
But in today, like to describe an interest rate as usurious means it's high.
So and every credit card ever.
Yeah.
Hey, do you want every Dodge dealership outside of a military base? Hey, listen, let me hook you up with this Charger for 37% interest. You're going to love it. It's fantastic.
Dodge dealerships are
$36,000 down.
Yeah, they're double bad because not only are you getting a bad interest rate, you're buying a Dodge.
Hey, chill. I want to come on so bad.
Come on down.
I'd buy one if I had money to burn, but I'm not buying one for those fucking transmissions.
Come on down to Johnny Tempor's Ford dealership.
If I had money to burn, I told my wife I'm getting a Supra. An automatic, too. Fuck everybody.
Bro, I hate you so much.
It's going to be awesome.
Fucking much right now. I hate you.
It's going to be great. I'm going to diss everyone.
I'm just going to scream.
So while this arrangement, as pointed out, was an early form of banking, it may have also been one of the first formal systems to support the use of checks. Because, you know, they're sort of like depositing their materials and then they're taking it out of the bank elsewhere. It's essentially the same as like a modern check. Hmm. This improved the safety of pilgrims by making them less attractive targets for thieves and also contributed, obviously, to the finances of the Templars.
Why don't the thieves just take their checks and then go turn them in themselves? I don't think they exactly had driver's licenses back then.
Why don't think they're going to, like, these guys are going to show up and they're going to be like, hey, you were here last week? And
well, yeah, strangely enough, I'm making another pilgrimage. Go figure.
And your name changed, too.
No,
Jerome's
son.
So based on this mix of donations and business dealings, the Templars established financial networks all across the Christian world. They acquire large tracts of land, both in Europe and the Middle East. They bought and managed farms and vineyards. They built massive stone cathedrals and castles. They were involved in manufacturing, import, and export, and they had their own fleet of ships, and at one point, they even owned the entire island of Cyprus.
Nice.
Cyprus. Big trees there.
They could arguably also qualify as the world's first multinational corporation.
Hmm. Knew I hated him for a reason.
Capitalism.
From the mid 12th century on, the Templars were forced jointly with the Knights Hospitaller to actively involve themselves in anti-Muslim military activities in the Iberian Peninsula, taking part in what is known as the Reconquista.
That's Spain, right?
Yes, it's Spain and Portugal. Mm. So prior to this time, most of the resources they had were dedicated towards just the extraction of resources to send to the to what was called the Latin East or the or Ultramar.
That's how you start your Minecraft game. You know, you got to dedicate yourself to the extraction of resources, and then you start to build.
In the kingdoms of Castile and Leon, they obtained some major strongholds, such as Calatrava Corea. But the fragility of their positions along the border was exposed upon the Umads carrying out an offensive against them.
Oh, the Umads?
No, Almohad.
Oh, okay.
In Aragon, the Templars seized the possessions of the Order of Montjoy in the late 12th century, becoming an important vanguard force in the border, while in Portugal, they were charged with operating some castles along the Tagus line. One of these was at Tomar, which was unsuccessfully sieged by the Almohad Caliphate in 1190. Due to the economic drain caused by sending a third of their revenues to the east, Templar and Hospitaller activities in the Iberian Peninsula were at a disadvantage in comparison to the Hispanic military orders, which were able to entirely devote their resources to the region.
So, okay. Does that mean that Portugal, like, didn't like the knights and they want to get them out of there?
No, what it means is that because they sort of spread themselves thin, because they have to have this obligation to go fight in the Reconquista, but they right. do have to send a third of their resources back to the Middle East. Because remember, that's where their main thing is, and holding Jerusalem is the more important thing. So they're weaker than the native, like the local military orders.
Gotcha.
Because there are other military orders in Spain and Portugal at this time. But they're weaker because they're, you know, the international commitment.
Gotcha. It's like NATO.
Yeah.
NATO sent some troops in. Great.
In the mid-12th century, the tide, though, began to turn in the Crusades. The Islamic world became more united, and under effective leaders such as the aforementioned Saladin, and also the Sunni, the new Sunni caliphate in Egypt, dissension would also begin to arise within Christian factions in and around the Holy Land. The Knights Templar would find themselves at odds with two other Christian military orders, the Knights Hospitaller and the Teutonic Knights. Decades of internecine feuds weakened Christian positions, both politically and militarily. After the Templars were involved in several unsuccessful campaigns, including the pivotal Battle of Hattin, Jerusalem was recaptured by Muslim forces under Saladin in 1187. The Holy Roman Emperor Frederick II reclaimed the city for Christians in the Sixth Crusade of 1229 without Templar aid, but only held it for little more than a decade. In 1244, the Ayyubid dynasty, together with their Khawarizmi mercenaries, recaptured Jerusalem, and the city did not return to Western control until 1917, when during World War I, the British captured it from the Ottoman Empire.
A lot going on in Jerusalem there.
Due to this loss in territory, the Templars were forced to relocate their headquarters to other cities in the north, such as Acre, which they were able to hold for the next century. It was lost in 1291, followed by their last mainland strongholds in Tortosa.
See, sometimes when we're talking about history, like, you drop the word century, and then you just keep going, and I'm like, that's a long fucking time, dude. That's
a long-ass time.
That's 100 years.
but they would also lose their mainland strongholds at Tortosa, modern-day Tartus in Syria, and at Atlit, which is in present-day Israel.
But they held for 100 years one area?
Yeah, the city of Acre.
I was under like the impression that the Templars didn't last that long. But I didn't realize they were around that long.
Yeah, and they still go further than that as well.
That's crazy.
Their headquarters then moved to Limassol.
Newark.
Yeah.
They found it strategic because of the airport.
Well, you know what they say, the Templars make and the world takes.
That's right. That'd be in Trenton. God. If they had their base in Trenton, yeah. The Templars helped George Washington cross the Delaware.
Oh, my God.
They heard there were Teutonics on the other side.
There were definitely Teutonics in Trenton at the time, and George Washington got those fucking Hessians out of there.
Their headquarters were moved to Limassol on the island of Cyprus, and they also attempted to maintain a garrison on a tiny Arwad island off the coast of Tortosa.
Okay, but in 13, I'll stay here. Sorry, that was my best in... Mr. Garrison. Okay.
In 1300, there was some attempt to engage in coordinated military efforts with the Mongols via a new invasion force at Arwad.
Ah, fuck yeah, let's do it.
In 1302 or 1303, however, the Templars would lose the island to the Egyptian Mamluk Sultanate in the Siege of Arwad.
How are you going to lose to a bunch of Mamluks?
Did it happen in 1302 or 1303? Which one is it, bro?
We're not entirely sure.
Nobody knows, dude.
Are we sure this even happened?
Nope.
We're it's not all even, lies, Ryan. We're this not podcast sure. isn't even happening.
Oh, no, I'm You're still asleep. You're not alive.
Wake up, Ryan. Wake
up. Ryan, wake up. You got to go to work, bro.
With Arwad being lost, the Crusaders lost their last foothold in the Holy Land.
What year?
Aww.
In 1302 or 1303. I think it happened at the end of 1302, and word might have gotten to them till 1303, so it was unsure, because I don't think the Mamluks like sent them a notice, like, hey, we evicted you assholes.
It just feels like odd. Like what weakened their position there?
Well, it was just a very small island.
Right.
That it was just very, it was easy for them to take after a prolonged siege.
It's just difficult to defend.
Egypt wanted it more, man, straight up. Like, they stuck to the fundamentals, they worked hard, yeah. And they took that fucking island.
I think that's it.
This is the Tempar, like, post-game interview where he's sitting at the table.
Yeah, just not saying anything at all, you know?
He's wearing a,
I just want to give a shout-out to Jesus.
They're sitting at the table with the mics.
He's wearing a hoodie with the cross on it. He's just like, I just want to say, you know, we went out there, made a good game. They played better than us. Apart. That's how it was.
We fell apart in the second half. You know, defense really wasn't doing its job. But you know, we would come back stronger than ever.
I'm not going to blame anybody. But let's just say I want to take us back to 1190. Anyways, this is over.
Whoa.
I'm taking my talents back to Jerusalem, okay? Like, I can't.
So, with the loss of the Holy Land, their mission becomes less important, and so support for them begins to dwindle. So, because the situation also becomes complex, because over their 200 years of existence, they had become a part of daily life throughout the Christian world. Their Templar houses, hundreds of which were throughout Europe and the Near East, gave them a widespread presence at a local level. They still managed many businesses, and many Europeans had daily contact with the Templar network, such as by working at a Templar farm or vineyard, or using the order as a bank in which to store personal valuables. The order, though, was still not subject to local governments, essentially making them a state within a state. It had a standing Yakuza. Army.
Goddamn mafia.
Yeah, they essentially are like a medieval like megacorp.
Yeah.
A standing army, although they no longer had a well-defined mission, and they could also pass freely throughout all borders.
So they're Ronin.
Well, it's like, what if Bank of America had a PMC?
Oh my god, no. Shut up. Shut the fuck up. Don't even say that too loud, because you know some asshole on the board of directors just like felt a disturbance.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Like, I have an idea.
Johnson, draw papers.
Wells Fargo's like, what if we just had our own fucking army? I think this would be great. We're going to go to war with SunTrust.
And this began also to...
The Wells Fargo militia. Just the fucking... just the shittiest possible militia. Just nobody knows what they're doing from top to bottom.
No. Wells Fargo militia would have the old horse and buggies like they have on like their logo. Like you just... like 100 of those things just riding into battle.
Yeah.
You go to deposit something at the credit union and this like wagon, horse-drawn wagon pulls up with a machine gun in the back and just starts opening fire.
Sure you want to do that, partner?
This situation, though, would heighten tensions among the nobility of Europe because the Templars were indicating an interest in founding their own monastic state, which the Teutonic Knights had done around the in the Baltic area and in what would become Prussia, and the Knights Hospitallier were also doing the same in Rhodes.
Steve, for everyone, including me, what's Prussia?
Prussia is essentially like East
the
Germany
and Russia.
That's a hell of a combination.
Prussia would essentially become like the heart of the German Empire.
Right.
It was just a large Eastern German state. At this time, it's not entirely German. There's still some like Slavic people there, what were called Wendish peoples.
Yeah, we hang as around. Well.
In 1305, the new Pope Clement V, who was based in Avignon, France, sent letters to both the Templar Grand Master Jacques de Molay and the Hospitalier now, Grand Master.
That's a name I've heard before.
That's a name, yeah, I've heard of Jacques de Molay.
And Fulk de Villeret to discuss the possibility of merging the two orders.
Jacques de Molay is in Dan Brown. He was in Holy Blood, Holy Grail.
Yeah. We'll get to why he is in a little bit.
Okay.
Doesn't he have some, like...
We gotta keep it mundane. We gotta keep it banal.
Doesn't Jacques de Molay have some kind of relation to Gilles de Rais? Or am I totally just whiffing on that?
I think you're whiffing because it's different names.
You mean Gilles de Rais?
Yeah, Gilles de Rais. Yeah.
The famous woman, you know. Gilles de
Rais. Gilles de Rais was a dude.
No, you don't remember that when we did the episode and you were saying, yeah. I thought you were saying Gilles de Rais. And Steve was just like, no. Gilles de Rais.
You know, I thought it was great it when was Babs the, I made played it the Gilles de Rais.
To the episode, I don't know what number it is, but it's way back there. It's like episode 14 now. I think we're on 124.
Yeah, that was an old one. Yeah.
I thought it was great when, you know, Babs played Gilles de Rais in that movie in the 60s, but that young girl from the village who wants to, you know, be a star.
I'm gonna make it.
So neither Grandmaster is like keen to this idea. But Pope Clement persists, and in 1306, he invites both of them to discuss the matter. De Molay arrives first in early 1307, but down. De Villeret was delayed for several months.
Having a sit down.
Yeah, it's the first meeting of families.
They're going to have the lock in. They're going to come out holding the Templar and the Hospitaller like bandanas tied together.
Doug, imagine being like Jacques de Molay, right, and getting there and having to just stare at the Pope for a bunch of like weeks and months until this other guy gets here. He just like sitting at a table, just kind of like looking at him, like
okay. Mm. So while waiting, de Molay and Clement. They discussed criminal charges that had been made 2 years earlier by an ousted Templar, and they were being discussed by King Philip IV of France and his ministers. It was generally agreed that the charges were false, but Clement sent King Philip a written request for assistance in the investigation. According to some historians, Philip, who was already deeply in debt to the Templars from his war against England, decided to seize upon the rumors for his own purposes. He began pressuring the church to take action against the order as a way of freeing himself from his debts. At dawn on Friday the 13th, October 1307, which, not the origin of Friday the 13th, but it sort of like leads, you know, to sort of the superstition around it. King Philip IV ordered de Molay and a number of other Templars to be simultaneously arrested.
Got it.
The arrest warrant stated the words, "God is not pleased. We have enemies of the faith in the kingdom." Claims were made that during Templar admission ceremonies, recruits were forced to spit on the cross, deny Christ, ooh, and engage in indecent kissing.
Ooh, brother, indecent kissing. What is that?
I think it was during their like. What's it called? Their like ceremony to like make a Templar.
Are they basically using tongue? Is that what it is?
I think they were just. Yeah, I think it was just men kissing men, like a mob thing. You know,
it was like okay. Baron Harkonnen and Fade Rutha. You know,
no, that was gay his name was a huge fucking homophobe. The guy who wrote Dune.
Frank Herbert. They tone it down in the latest movie, and also the Lynch one a bit.
Yeah.
But he's not only a homosexual, he's also a pedophile.
Yeah, yeah. Not the author of Dune, but what's it called? Yeah. Baron Harkonnen.
Yeah, Baron Harkonnen.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, he wrote him that Frank way. Herbert, Frank Herbert's son was gay and he fucking hated homosexuals and
yeah, he disowned him.
Yeah, he wasn't even allowed to come to his own mother's funeral because he was gay.
God damn.
Yeah, so like, Dune's a great movie, but the guy who wrote it is a fucking asshole.
It's like H.P. Lovecraft. All his stuff is great, but oh boy.
Yeah, you don't celebrate it. Read the book. It's good horror, well, and then just never touch it again.
There's also the one letter at the end of his life where he's coming around. Like, if he hadn't died, he probably would have, like, recanted most of the things he said.
Hey, do you guys know the name of his cat?
Frank Herbert? Yeah, I think it's Mark. I think it's Meow Deep.
Don't Google that.
I'm pretty sure it's Meow Deep.
It's an even worse name, Steve. It's Brian Herbert.
Oh, my God.
Brethren of the Knights Templar were accused of worshipping idols, and the order was said to have encouraged homosexual practices.
Look, just because they're into Japan and Japanese music doesn't mean that they're... Sorry.
Many of the allegations against them contain tropes that would used that were used in accusations made against other persecuted groups such as Jews, heretics, and accused witches. These allegations were highly politicized, obviously, without any real evidence. Still, the Templars were charged with numerous other offenses such as financial corruption, fraud, and secrecy. Many of the accused confessed to the charges under torture, even though the Templars would deny being tortured in their written confessions, and their confessions, even though obtained under duress, caused a scandal in Paris. The prisoners were coerced to confess that they had spat on the cross as well, and one said, "I, Raymond de la Fere, 21 years old, admit that I have spat 3 times on the cross, but only from my mouth and not from my heart."
What?
I think what? I think that was part of their like initiation thing. The spitting thing.
I don't know if that's actually... I don't think they would like spit on the cross, though.
Right.
That seems a bit crazy for like a Catholic monastic order to do that.
I was about to say, like, at their baseline, they're a religious sect. So sitting there like, oh yeah, we spit on the cross for admission to the Knights Templar, it doesn't even like make sense.
Well, it would be so loud too, because most of them are French, because they'd just be going pew,
yeah. Pew, pew. Oh my god, I like the French, by the way. We're shitting on them a little too much.
No, we're not.
Okay, sure. So
the Templars that were accused of idolatry were charged with worshipping either a figure known as Baphomet or a mummified severed head they recovered, amongst other artifacts, at their original headquarters on the Temple Mount. Some have theorized that this head might have been believed to be that of John the Baptist, among other things. A Catholic group having, like, the severed head of some guy that they think is a holy figure is, like, the least, like, controversial thing ever. Because the Catholic Church is all about, like, yeah, we got this guy's corpse, it's encrusted in jewels, pay your respects.
They're all about relics, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's all about relics.
Dude, if you go to Rome, there is no shortage of places where you can still go to see, like, caskets and, like...
St. Jerome's testicle hair, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you could see, like, a whole body just, like, hanging in a room, and you're just like, what the fuck is that? And they'd be like, that is the Pope, you know,
that's the Pope Gregory the 15th. Ignatius of Loyola.
There's a whole, I forget what it's called, but there's a whole, like, underground church-type, like, worship area where it's just skulls.
Yeah,
like,
the ossuary or whatever.
Yeah,
it's a
wall of skulls, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's where they, because they, most churches in Europe would do that due to limited space, is that after so long, they would dig up the bodies in the cemetery, and they'd put them in the crypt underneath the, or the ossuary underneath the church.
And then they have all this free land for more bodies to be buried.
So relenting to King Philip's demands, Pope Clement then issued the papal bull Pastoralis Praementia, on November 22nd, 1307, which instructed all Christian monarchs in Europe to arrest all Templars and seize their assets.
Oh, boy.
Clement called for papal hearings to determine the Templars' guilt or innocence, and once freed of the Inquisition's torture, many Templars would recant their confessions.
So the king has more power than the Pope? Is that what we're talking about now?
Well, essentially, because of things that are going on in the Catholic Church at this time, the Pope is in Avignon, which is in France. So it's sort of a situation like in World War II with the Pope and Mussolini. Like, you're in this guy's, like, backyard. You can't really, like, go against him. And it's not uncommon as well. For instance, the Normans do this when they invade England. is that they essentially have the Pope held hostage and get him to say, like, oh, no, you're the legitimate ruler of England.
Gotcha. So why can't the Knights Templar just go walking back into France? Like, hey, this is our boy. You're not going to step down on him. Like, we'll just fuck your whole country up.
Well, the Grand Master's already been, like, arrested, as well as a bunch of key Templars. So their leadership's sort of been decapitated, and the Pope has essentially told everyone that they need to do that, and they don't really know what's going on, too, either.
Gotcha. Okay.
Several Templars are listed as having come from Kisors to defend the order on February 26, 1310. Henry Zeppelins, or Chaplain Anseu de Rochera, Enard de Valendencia, Guame de Roy, Geoffrey de Serra, or de La Fere and Champagne, Robert Harl, or de Harmonville, and Droy de Chevreux. Some had sufficient legal experience to defend themselves in the trials, but in 1310, having appointed the Archbishop of Seine, Philip de Marengi, to lead the investigation, Philip blocked this attempt using the previously forced confessions to have dozens of Templars burned at the stake in Paris.
Oh, shit.
While Philip threatened military action unless the Pope complied with his wishes, Clement finally agreed to disband the order, citing the public scandal that had been generated by the confessions. At the Council of Vienna in 1312, he issued a series of papal bulls, including the Vox in Excelsio, which officially dissolved the order, and Ad Providam, which turned over most Templar assets to the Hospitallers.
And so this is pretty much all because the Templars were getting kind of rich, and which king was this that we're talking about from France? Which one?
Philip.
King Philip. So King Philip just kind of... Old King Philly, he's just feeling kind of emasculated, and he wants him gone. Is that pretty much?
Well, he owes them money, and he doesn't want to pay. It's just one weird trick to get out of paying back your creditors.
Like those fucking YouTube ads, man. Have you seen those YouTube ads now? Like, you're watching it, and it's some fucking schmucky con man, and he's just like, don't spend another dime on Amazon.com. And you're just like...
Always.
I'm just like, dude, who are you...
Shut up.
Yeah, that's like...
who the fuck are you selling with that line? Like,
this is like a third of TikTok.
Who the fuck are you selling with that line, though? Like, don't... I got the secret. The secret. Much better option than a $1 billion conglomerate that controls the flow of products across the international landscape. Yeah.
Don't buy from Amazon, who could deliver in 2 days, even same day delivery. As a matter of fact, buy from me, because I'm going to drop ship you some garbage from fucking Temu.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? It'll take 3 weeks to get to your house from China.
Don't spend another dime on anything on the website we all buy things from. Well, okay, pal.
I hate Amazon just as much as the next man, but goddamn, ordering something from Prime and getting it the same day is...
They have commodified convenience, and it's
I hate
it's,
it. Yeah. I hate it.
As for the leaders of the order...
Capitalism, sorry.
I hate you.
Elderly Grand Master Jacques de Molay, who had confessed under torture, retracted his confession. Geoffrey de Charnay, preceptor of Normandy, also retracted his confession and insisted on his innocence.
Had my fingers crossed.
Both men, under pressure from the king, were declared guilty of being relapsed heretics and sentenced to burn alive at the stake in Paris on March 18th, 1314. De Molay reportedly remained defiant until the end, asking to be tied in such a way that he could face the Notre Dame Cathedral and hold his hands together in prayer.
All right, bro, relax with your fucking histrionics. Relax, bro.
According to legend, he called out from the flames that both Pope Clement and King Philip would soon meet him before God.
Nice. His actual... Hey, when you're on fire like that, you can say anything you want. It's pretty you have true freedom in that moment.
The actual words that he said were recorded on the parchment as follows. God knows who is wrong and has sinned. Soon a calamity will occur to those who have condemned us to death.
Oh, wait. So they recorded this?
Yeah.
Like, they wrote it down while he was burning?
Yeah, there's like a stenographer.
They didn't have fucking ballpoint pens back then, so can you imagine, like, using the feather and, like, making a mistake, like, having to, like, scratch it out? Wait, hang on, what'd you say? Hold on, go slower, slow down. He is wrong. What? Bro, stop screaming. What the fuck did you just say? I'm trying to write this down, man.
Side note, we were talking about that at work. A little pro advice is the Rahm Emanuel advice to Obama, which is that, like, in a crisis, you can do things you can't normally do in like, regular circumstances. I like throwing that around at work because of all the Republicans. I'm like, Obama had this thing.
Oh God, do not get the fucking Republicans amped up by saying Obama. So that's all I'm gonna say is Obama. Like,
it's so funny. But it is actually an interesting concept though.
A month after the execution of Dumoulin, Pope Clement would die. And Philip died in a hunting accident within the same year.
Uh-oh. Wow. Predicted it.
The remaining Templars around Europe were either arrested or tried under the papal investigation, with virtually none of them being convicted, and were usually absorbed into other Catholic military orders, or pensioned off and allowed to live out their days peacefully.
Do you think they burned people at the stake because it was, like, holy shit, insane, like, torture and the optics of it? Or do you think they did it just because that's kind of the way they
did things back optics. Then? There's a million ways. They knew how to kill people, so it's definitely optics.
Well, it's also, like, a religious, like, fuck you, because you no one gets cremated during this time because it's actually, like, against the precepts of the church to be cremated. It's considered a pagan burial because your body is supposed to remain intact for when the second coming comes, because you'll be resurrected and your body needs to be intact. So if, like, your body is turned to ash, you can't be around for, like, the second coming.
Really?
Yeah. So them, like, is like a fuck you on top of, like, we're gonna kill you in the most painful way possible. We're also gonna make it so that, you know, you can't be around for that.
Damn. That is a new level of petty that I didn't know existed.
So, like I said, most of them are sort of, like, let go. By papal decree, the property of the Templars was transferred to the Knights Hospitallier, except in the kingdoms of Castile, Aragon, and Portugal. Portugal was the first kingdom in Europe where they had settled, occurring only 2 or 3 years after the order's foundation in Jerusalem, and even having a presence during Portugal's conception. The Portuguese king, Denis the First, refused to pursue and persecute the former knights, as had occurred in some other states under the influence of Philip and the Crown. Under his protection, Templar organizations simply changed their name from the Knights Templar to the reconstituted Order of Christ, and also a parallel Supreme Order of Christ of the Holy See, both being considered successors to the Knights Templar.
They sound like offshoots of the Black Panthers, you know?
Or like the IRA, yeah. Or the provisional IRA, the yeah. real IRA. Yeah,
exactly. Those are the funniest ones. Yeah.
We're the real Knights Templar.
Yeah,
I'll talk to my cousins and I'll be like, all right, so listen, like, who do we support now? Is it like, because the IRA is gone? Is it like the RIRA? Is it the PIRA? Is it like the ABC IRA? Like buying Bitcoin.
How many do you need? Do you need a UBTC or a PBTC? What do you need?
They're all over there like, bro, we don't fucking know. Fuck the Brits. Just like, all right.
In September of 2001, a document known as the Chenon Parchment, dated 17 to 20th of August 1308, was discovered in the Vatican archives by Barbara Frawley, apparently after having been filed in the wrong place in 1628.
I'm sorry, they found this when?
2001.
In 2001.
In what month?
September.
I'm sensing a little bit of distraction here.
Well, good paying attention there. I totally missed that.
Well,
I feel like Bush called Barbara and said, Barbara, I need you to find something. Just get this heat off me for a minute, because we are not doing great over here.
I need Mom, you to find get a over biblical there. Document in the Vatican. All right.
We'll talk a little about that in the second episode.
I knew
George
it.
Bush.
So it is a... the Chenon Parchment is a record of the trial of the Templars and shows that Clement absolved the Templars of all heresies in 1308 before formally disbanding the order in 1312. As did another Chenon Parchment dated August 20th, addressed to Philip IV of France, also mentioning that all Templars that had confessed to heresy were, quote-unquote, restored to the sacraments and to the unity of the Church.
Isn't there, like, a conspiracy that there are, like, extant Templar families or something?
Well, no, the Knights Templar technically still exists, and I'll get to that after this point.
Okay.
This other Chenon on parchment has been well known to historians, having been published by Etienne Blouse in 1693 and by Pierre Dupuy in 1751. The current position of the Roman Catholic Church is that the medieval persecution of the Knights Templar was unjust, that nothing was inherently wrong with the order or its rule, and that Pope Clement was pressed into his actions by the magnitude of the public scandal and by the dominating influence of King Philip IV, who was his relative.
Of course the Roman Catholic diddler church is going to sit there and be like, no, Knights Templar was fine. It was like their people.
But what happens is that the order still continues on in Portugal as that order of Christ that I mentioned. And you know how, like, with Portugal and Brazil, there's that red cross with the white cross in the middle of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Templar cross.
Oh, wow.
That's like the order of Christ. That's like they're like modified as time went on Templar cross. And that the Knights Templar were involved with the colonization of Africa and sort of the exploration of that area because they're part of Portugal. And all of that sort of goes into it, and that's why that sort of becomes a symbol for those countries, because under, for instance, the exploration of Africa, that becomes part of the flag, and that also becomes a symbol of Portugal. Mm. For instance, Prince Henry the Navigator, he was the order's Grand Master.
Prince Henry the Navigator?
Yeah, the one Portuguese prince who was known for, like, being an explorer.
Oh, I don't know shit. And went around, like, I freely admit I don't know jack shit about Portuguese history other than what I've learned from Shogun.
But as this order still... this order went on to exist until around 1910. However... it was dissolved when Portugal became a monarchy, but in 1917, it was revived as an order under the Republic, the Military Order of Christ, together with the other Portuguese orders of merit, had statues revived on several occasions and still exists to this day. So there's still technically Knights of the Order of Christ, which is like the Reformed version of the Knights of Templar. It just became a secular organization in the, like, late 18th century, and it just continued on as one of those, like, military orders that gets given away, like, you know, in European countries, like knighthood and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So still technically, the Templars still exist.
That's crazy.
It's one of those things, too, that as time went on, when they were in Portugal, that they just began, like, letting them do more and more things. They didn't have to have the vow of poverty. They could freely have families and stuff like that. They just gave them more and more freedoms, just as they became less and less important.
You mean we don't have to pull out? All right.
But I've gotten so good at using the rhythm method.
The rhythm method.
That's what it's called.
And also within Freemasonry, there are references to the Knights Templar since at least the 18th century. Templar symbols and rituals are incorporated in a number of Masonic bodies. The best known reference to the Knights Templar in Freemasonry is the degree of Knight of the Temple or Order of the Temple.
Scottish,
the
right?
Final I guess this is in a number of, like, Freemason rites. And the final order joined in the United Religious, Military, and Masonic Orders of the Temple and of St. John of Jerusalem, Palestine, Rhodes, and Malta, commonly known as the Knights Templar.
Yeah, I think Scottish Rite, because, you know, I know some Freemasons, and I think Scottish Rite has the Templar degrees.
Like,
never mind.
And And the Knights Templar often take part in public parades and exhibitions, wearing distinctive uniforms, and have a number of high-profile members, such as former presidents Henry Ford and Harry S. Truman. And then we'll talk a little bit more about the pseudo-historical theories involving them.
I feel like Henry Ford should have been kicked out of the Freemasons the same way Kramer from Seinfeld was.
Wait, what? What? No, shut the fuck up. Michael Richards was not a Mason.
Yes, he was.
No way. Are you for real?
Yeah, he got.
They let anybody in that motherfucker.
Well, that's not. Well, they definitely can. I mean, there's very few things that'll prevent you from joining. You can't just join though. Someone has to like sponsor you, so you have to like be asked to join.
And I misspoke. Oh,
Michael Richards is a 33rd degree Freemason.
You know, he just stumbled into the lodge and they had to let him in, you know, just like into Jerry's apartment. He couldn't just tell him to get out. He just came in, started eating from the cereal box.
Imagine every time he goes and like comes into the lodge, he comes in like he's entering Jerry's apartment, like sliding in, like shaking.
I guess he wasn't removed, though. Of course not.
But I misspoke. I described Henry Ford as a president. He was never president. God help us.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I just said he was president of Ford.
I'm running a presidential decree here to put the Protocols of the Elders of Zion into the Constitution.
I was thinking...
Henry.
Don't give Trump any ideas.
I was thinking Gerald Ford when I saw it, because Harry S. Truman was after him.
Dead today at the stunning age of 83.
Gerald Ford did nothing wrong except all the massive war crimes he perpetrated during his term.
I feel like, though, you know, I'm not copping out, but I feel like you can't be a world leader without committing at least one war crime, whether it's on purpose or by accident or like the results of what you do.
I mean, Allende was like murdered under his watch. So
yeah. Or Allende.
I can only imagine Trump getting elected.
No, Allende in Chile.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think it's Allende.
Yeah, it's Salvador Allende. I can only imagine Trump getting elected president and being like, guys, I read this amazing book. You're never going to believe it.
A lot of people are going to get mad at me about this. A lot of them.
But it's called The Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
You know, yeah, I've been saying it. He's been saying it for years.
He's always got to throw that one word out that he overpronounces. Zion.
The Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
I always knew he was strong.
I keep it on my... Crooked Joe Biden has never even read the Turner Diaries.
I always knew I always knew Jared could get it done. I always knew. This is why. Is it, folks?
Oh my God.
Oh God.
And then he just rambles on about Fashion Week for like 5 minutes.
Did you see that picture going around right now where there's like four Marines at Mar-a-Lago and just surrounded by a bunch of what appear to be Russian prostitutes?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Not good.
One thing that does come from the Trial of the Knights Templar that isn't entirely like a one-for-one thing, but I think heavily influences it, is that the symbol of like Baphomet is heavily like involved in the trial.
Yeah.
Of the goat-headed, winged like creature from alchemy, which is originally from the Key of Solomon, I think.
Yeah, it's the Key of Solomon.
But what sort of happens with that is that originally there's this theory that when they were accused of what they were worshiping, that it was actually that they were worshiping Muhammad, but because of like mispronunciation or misrecording it, instead of Baphomet, it was like Mahomet or something like that.
Mahomet,
which is and that they were actually being accused of being Muslims. Because like it was also very much like a horse and his boy, like levels of like, no, Muslims actually worship like a demon. That's what's really going on here.
Oh no.
But that there's sort of theories with that, and I think it influences also the conception of the devil. Because there isn't really a conception of the devil in Christianity, because it's a figure that doesn't really exist in the Bible in the sense of how like Christians believe in it.
How we think of it, the red guy.
Well, I'd say how modern Christians believe in it, in that like devil and Satan are just sort of like general terms that are used for a great evil. Like, and it's just like the adversary, yeah. But it's not so much like a hooved like goat man type figure, like Baphomet. And that just sort of like, because it's such a big public trial, and because they had been sort of like all throughout Europe, that it would have been a story that like most people in Europe would have heard about, and it would have propagated this sort of
throw out
idea.
All my Baphomet figurines now. God damn it.
Yes. Yes.
I'm sorry, Steve.
God damn it. I'll go back to the Goetic Sciences. It's fine.
Your problematic faves.
Oh my god. And on that note, is that the end of the mundane history? It's pretty goddamn mundane, if you ask me.
Yeah, pretty that's goddamn, the end of the mundane history of the banal. Knights Templar.
Pretty goddamn banal.
The Knights Templar is like a really interesting story. Yeah, right? Like
good mythos.
If you just ask somebody who only has like a cursory understanding of things like that, they'll be like, yeah, Knights Templar were great. They were cool. They were badasses. They were like the prodigal Navy SEALs. You know, Steven Seagal would have wanted to be a Knights Templar if he was around back
some
then.
Some douchey Christian's just giving you these lines.
Yeah, but like, you know, you really dive into it. It's more like, oh shit, okay, they were actually with the fucking nonsense.
Well, they're like racists are really big into them because of the whole fighting Muslims thing. Because Anders Breivik, he claimed that he was part of like a new like Knights Templar order.
Isn't he the piece of shit who shot up? Was it Norway or
Finland? That part of his thing that he claimed, because like when they first got him, they were talking to him. They thought that he was part of like, he could have possibly been part of like a larger group, but they realized very soon after that it wasn't like that he was just full of shit.
This guy was full of horse shit.
And that he has this whole thing that like he wanted to create a society where there's like a new Knights Templar that are essentially going to carry out the Turner Diaries, and that they're going to like take over Europe or whatever through like terrorism.
I think if you go back and look at the timeline of that day when he started like that mass shooting, it is insane. Because like, I guess he was calling like their version of 911 and being like, hey, I'm on this island, I'm shooting people, come get me. And like, he just kept walking around killing people. So they get like a group of like basically cops or special forces guys to jump on the little Zodiac boats, the little inflatable boats, and to get over to this island, and the fucking boat sinks because they have too many guys and gear on it, and like too much gear, so it sinks like halfway going over there. I guess he was like on the shore watching this, and he's like, shrugs his shoulders and turns around and just goes to like go shoot at more people.
Well,
and I'm like,
part of the thing was that he set off a bomb in downtown, whatchamacallit, the capital of Norway,
Oslo.
Yeah, Oslo. He set off a bomb in Oslo in an attempt to kill the prime minister. And so they were all worried about this bomb. Jeez. And then the people were like, so when he calls in to say, like, well, I'm on this island, I'm ready to turn myself in shooting, they don't know, like, what to think. So they're just like, it's like, what the fuck is he talking about? The bombing's in Oslo or whatever. This guy's obviously just like a crank caller.
Yeah, he's like, I'm bored. I shot so many people. God. I'm fucking bored. Come get me. Like, that's literally what his phone call was. Like, I'm done. I got it out of my system. Come get me.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, last podcast on the left did a really good episode series on him.
Anyway, we'll discuss more Templar theories, including, do the Knights Templar have anything to do with the fact that Taco Bell was selling his yoga mats? Good evening.
Yes.
What?
Just something to think about until we come back.
All right. Well, on that note, good night. Good luck. Live Moss.
That is now the new exit for Steve. Every time. Until we get sued by Taco Bell. Cease and desist by Taco Bell. All right. And goodbye.